According to some estimates, over 50 billion apps were downloaded in 2012, and an increasing number of those apps are geared to the youngest consumers. Like TV, the amount of time young children spend using tablets and smartphones has become another thing for parents to worry about. But what are children as young as two getting from those apps? Are they learning things, or are they training to become screen-staring zombies? Well, joining us now is Hannah Rosen. She's a contributor to The Atlantic, and her latest novel, The Touchscreen Generation, appears in the April issue of that magazine. I'm very pleased that it brings her to our show today. Hello.
Hello.
And we also want to hear from our listeners. If you have, do you put any limits on the time your kids spend playing on a tablet, computer, or on your smartphone? Do you think that they learn anything from those apps? Well, you can give us a call at 212-433-9692 or write us on our show page at WNYC.org or find us on Facebook or on Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. So, Hannah, do we know what percentage of kids are using some form of electronic media?
Oh, it's a huge percentage. They call it the passback effect. So it's not so much, you know, they're not so much counting how many hours do you spend in front of the TV the way they used to. They're counting, you know, percentage of children who have used an iPad or an iPhone or some form of mobile technology, which is in the 90-something percentile. It's now this gray zone because, as we as parents all know, you know, it's one of those things where your kid just picks up your iPhone or picks up the iPad that's sitting around the house. It's not so formal as turning on the television anymore.
Well, the iPhone introduced these apps, but then the iPod really jump-started the market for kids' apps.
Yeah. In 2010 is when researchers really began to pay attention, because iPhones, you know, the apps are pretty small. The parents hide them in their bags. But then there were the iPads, which really were so accessible to children. And, you know, they were quite beautiful. They were, you know, really high-end. The apps looked really good. And you know, just as importantly, very young children could access the technology pretty easily.
And are these available on all the various forms of smartphones?
Yeah, I mean, most parents sort of use it in this guilty fashion. That's what I write about, that parents are quite guilt-ridden about it. And my article is trying to get you to the next place, so that we just kind of load an app on, let our kid use it while we're sitting at a restaurant or in an airplane, but we don't know how to feel about it. We sort of worry about what it's doing to their brains. So that's the sort of uninformed position we all start from. So what I try and do in this article is get a little bit beyond that by looking at some of the research and looking at some of the, you know, specific apps that are out there, and trying to come up with a different way that we can think about this, rather than I'm going to do it, but I'm going to feel really bad about it.
Well, is this similar to what we've been discussing over the years about parking a kid in front of a TV when we want to do something for ourselves?
Yes, I mean, the language we use, like their brain is going to turn to mush, or, you know, parking them in front of the TV, even that is this kind of neurotic, guilt-ridden language, whereas there has been about 30, 25 years of excellent research on television explaining which shows are really good, what the shows can do for our kids, you know, both entertainment and education-wise. So I think a lot of this is shifting our attitude, so we stop thinking of it as like a lollipop or poison, and we start to actually engage with, look, there are really interesting things that can happen with this technology. Now, the reason it's different from television is the interactivity turns out to be really key. It turns out to be something that children really respond to, that's a potential tool for learning and for having fun in a way that even television is not. Television started to scratch the surface of interactivity, but not in any way the way these new apps and mobile technology does.
So most of these new apps are interactive?
Yeah, so this is about, you know, your even very little kids. I mean, I write about my own kid in the story, and he plays a game in which you speak to this talking hippo. This was when he was very young, I mean, maybe two. You speak to the talking hippo laughs, you know, repeats back your name. It's just like a recording device, and he would laugh every time. And so there's a way in which it makes more sense to them than, say, a television did, because it's contingent, it's interactive. You respond, it responds back. So it's that interactivity which researchers are trying to take advantage of, to see what they can do, to see how they can teach kids and integrate it into kids' learning so that they can track their own development, record what they're doing. It's just sort of another tool, and I think people are starting to use it in pretty cool ways in classrooms and even for entertainment, much more creatively than, as you said, sitting in front of a television.
One children's media reviewer calls the iPad a rattle on steroids.
Yes.
But it is kind of spooky how kids, even toddlers, can intuitively use tablets like the iPad.
Well, that's one thing I wrote about, is the reason the iPad had researchers so excited is because I have slightly older children who are 12 and 9, and they're technologically adept. They're part of the technology generation. But, you know, using a mouse is not all that intuitive. Using a mouse requires you to understand the relationship between what you're doing with your hand and how that looks on the screen. There's a few steps there, so very young kids cannot figure that out. But using a touch screen is extremely intuitive, even to extremely young children. So I had to teach my toddler son absolutely nothing about using the iPad. He completely figured it out. It is like a rattle in the sense that you touch it, you do something with your fingers, which is a stage of cognitive development for young children, and something results from that. You know, it's as simple as that. Like, I shake the rattle, it makes a noise. I touch the screen, the truck moves across the screen. I mean, it's really, really intuitive and doesn't require much teaching from the parents.
Listeners have been writing in. Vanessa on Facebook says, I can't even use my iPad in front of my 18-month-old without him stealing it from me.
Right.
And, of course, he loves my phone. The baby apps are great for occupying them when you need to get stuff done.
Yeah, I agree with that. But then you can start thinking of those baby apps as interesting in other ways, as teaching the kids something, not as things that you do just to pass the time or because you need to get something done. I mean, that's one key point I try and get across in this story, that, you know, you don't, as one great researcher who looks a lot into this subject said, you know, stop thinking of it as like a terrible magazine that you use to pass the time with when you're sitting in the hair salon waiting for your appointment. That's how parents think of the technology. It's much, much more interesting than that, and it's much more rich and creative. So, you know, don't pass on to your children the idea that, you know, this is poison, use it sparingly. You know, sort of understand that even for little kids, there are interesting things that they can do and learn with this technology. It's not time wasted. It's not brain rot. It's actually something more interesting than that.
A listener left this comment on our show page. My sister has been working as an occupational therapist with special needs children and some typical kids as well for decades, and she thinks iPads are really great for development. And a friend of mine made the point to me that if today's kids are going to be using technology their whole lives in a way that most adults today haven't, then limiting their exposure to these apps is just delaying the inevitable. Do you think there's some truth to that?
Yes, that's something I heard from a lot of, you know, particularly middle-aged researchers. They've been researching for a long time. They're not, you know, part of the intuitive technology generation. But they say, look, this is inevitable. We live in a technological world, so we might as well engage and not just think of, you know, not just do this mindless kind of, oh, my God, I'm going to do it, but it's terrible and I feel really guilty. That's not a logical or smart way to engage with what's obviously happening all around us. We might as well look, take advantage of the research, think about it a lot, and then, you know, make the right decision the way we would about a child's school or the books that a kid reads or anything else. We might as well engage and stop pretending like it's not happening, because it is happening.
Well, let's hear what some of our listeners are thinking. Orel, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Leonard. I really love your show.
Well, thank you. Do you listen to us on a computer or on an old-fashioned radio?
Lately on my iPad. And I'm a children's book author and a poet. And I've recently entered the world of apps in two ways, actually. My first two picture books were out of print. They've been re-released as apps. And right now I've been collaborating with a producer in Paris and an artist in Paris on an absolutely gorgeous, old-fashioned, watercolor animated app of spring poems that I wrote and translated into French. So what I wanted to say about apps is I think they have a potential that you don't find in print books, because you can create an app that a child can grow with. For instance, the spring app, my grandson loves it, because in the April poem we actually have shoots, growing flowers that sing to touch, and then ducks will repeat the song that you compose, and he loves that, and he doesn't necessarily understand the rhyme metaphor, a shoots a flute. That is the basis of the poem, but he will eventually.
So, Hannah, have you been hearing about apps like that?
Yes, I see. I absolutely love that attitude, because instead of saying, you know, I'm a poet and I'm a children's book author and that's the good thing and the technology is the bad thing, you know, instead of doing that opposition, you say to yourself, well, look, I can take the principles that I appreciate and love about poetry and writing and illustrating, and I can do something cool and different with them in this new platform. It's not the same, you know, it's not exactly what it was, but it's interesting in its own right as its own thing, and I think that's what a lot of people are starting to realize. And if you do that in a really smart way, in other words, you're not just taking the book, sticking it on the iPad, having the kid touch things, but you think, just in the way that you would if you were bringing a novel onto film, you would think to yourself, oh, there are interesting ways to do that, and there are really dull ways to do that. You can do the same thing with books. There are really interesting things you can take advantage of in this technology, which brings out its best and creates a new product. And I think that's a great attitude.
Now, not everybody agrees. Beth from the Upper West Side, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. You know, I do agree that there are great things about the interactive technology, but the mobile aspect sort of, I think, causes a problem. I am constantly seeing parents with their younger children out and older children, and they're not talking to their kids because the kids are just sitting there. They're sitting in the pizza place. They're sitting in the bagel store, and they're not conversing with their family because they're just sitting there. And, you know, I know mom's tired at 7 o'clock because so am I, but you know what? If you're going to go out and eat some pizza, it's an opportunity to actually interact with a human as opposed to a mobile device.
Anna?
That's a day-by-day decision. I have three kids. I've had that feeling, too, even with my own children, where they'll want the phone at an inconvenient time. And I would say, you know, it's hard for an outsider to judge kind of what phase the family is in at that particular moment. But there are some general rules. Like, if this is becoming too much a part of your child's life, if you feel like they're so fixated on the phone that, you know, they're not spending any time doing anything else, this is kind of an individual child. I have very different feelings, for example, child by child, where with one child, I keep a much closer eye because it feels to me like he could really get sucked into this world. So I keep very, you know, like pretty concrete limits on him. Whereas for the other kids, I'm much more fluid because I don't feel that they can draw in. So you might look at them at one pizza dinner and think, ah, why is he not talking to his mom? But at another pizza dinner, you know, he'd be all gregarious and have no interest in the phone. So I do think, you know, it's a minute by minute thing with kids.
But I have been in situations where two kids were sitting side by side, each with their mobile device, and they were talking to each other, and all they had to do was just turn and talk to each other the normal way. You wonder whether there isn't a distancing problem in some situations.
But you are sort of fighting a losing battle. I mean, my daughter, who's a preteen, you know, they often are sort of on their phones and talking at the same time. I mean, the way they socialize is so different from the way I socialize. So I thought for myself, you know, my son uses video games as a form of bonding. I mean, he and his friends talk about them. They come home and play them together. They talk about what scores and strategies. I mean, that's all right. You know, there's something very social in that and very, you know, it's definitely a source of bonding. So I can't.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, so I don't think it's, you know, necessarily distancing. It has some distancing elements, and it has some bringing together elements to it.
You went to a meeting of a number of developers who were test driving their work on apps aimed at toddlers. Several of them quoted Maria Montessori to you: "The hands are the instruments of man's intelligence." Do you think that Maria Montessori would be a fan of the iPad?
You know, probably not. As even though that's a phrase that they used a lot, you know, you do have to take into account that childhood, especially for, you know, someone my age, I'm in my 40s, that childhood is so different now. This is such a big part of children's lives. You know, these are the toys that kids, you know, live around and know about and are interested in. So I think it would take Maria Montessori a long time to figure out how to integrate this into her worldview. She was a big believer in sensory, you know, and feeling things and sort of touching things, balls and sand and all of that. So I think she would probably worry that touch screens, even though they do involve the concept of touch and using your fingers to create something, do leave out a lot of the other senses.
And often you just wind up, the kids anyway, use their thumbs more. In the end, they're probably going to have the most well-developed thumbs in the history of humanity.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in the story, I write about an interesting experiment I did. The most extreme person I talked to when I was reporting the story basically doesn't put any limits on his child. He has a 7-year-old son, and he says, you know, you can watch what he wants, he can play what he wants. He's got sort of iPads there with his video games and his Legos and his cars and his trucks, and I put no limits on him. And I was so fascinated by that idea that I tried it on my toddler son, and I write in the story about the outcome of that experiment and how he sort of wavered in and out of using the iPad and what problems that caused in our lives. And,
well, you spoke to Mark Prinsky, an education and technology writer, who does set limits.
Yes. No, he's the one who doesn't set limits. So he's the one who just lets – this is the guy I'm talking about. He doesn't believe in limits. He believes that we parents are just acting like technophobes when we privilege, you know, certain kinds of entertainment over other kinds of entertainment. So I did it with my own son, and the result was very interesting. I mean, he was very annoying at first. You know, it took – it was sort of a couple of weeks of him wanting to play the iPad in the morning or while we were eating dinner or at incredibly inconvenient times. And then it just kind of dropped out of rotation like all other toys. I mean, he utterly forgot about it for weeks and weeks and weeks. You know, he was just not that interested. It's not all that different from how he's been obsessed with, you know, cars and trucks for a long period of time, or now he's obsessed with maps and puzzles. And so it was just one other thing that kind of he got obsessed with, let drop. Now every once in a while he picks it up again if he's reminded of it or if his big brother is playing. But, you know, that edge kind of, it took the edge off my doing that. You know, it took the edge off my thinking, oh, my God, his brain's turning to mush. He's going to become addicted to this thing. I sort of no longer have that thought because I've been through the process, and then he dropped it. He let it go.
Do we tend to forget that for hundreds of years, kids have, some kids anyway, have used books to isolate themselves just as easily as they can with an iPad?
Yeah, I mean, I do mention that because my daughter is one such person. You know, she's mildly interested in her technology, but she's a voracious reader, and I think most parents would think that's a wonderful thing, and I do think it's a wonderful thing, but she definitely, you know, she brings a book every social occasion. She's fairly shy, and she reads her book, you know? I mean, there's a way in which you can think, oh, the book is the way that she has of entering her own world and, you know, not engaging in the outside world, so... all these things are complicated.
Lindsay, a listener, left this comment on our Facebook page. My kids have used the iPad and iPhone and MacBooks for most of their lives. I can vouch for the effectiveness and usefulness of apps for math tutoring. My second grader has benefited immensely from the use of certain math apps. But you got to get the kid to like the math app. That's the problem.
Yeah, well, good ones are great. I mean, my kids make no distinction between the ones that are explicitly educational, if they're really fun and cool. I mentioned some in the story, and ones that are, you know, ones that are fun. Like, they don't really know those distinctions. They like them equally. And I don't force one kind or another on them. I think school systems are going to solve some of this problem for us because school systems here and there across the country and in Europe are starting to integrate iPad technology pretty deeply into their curriculum. And I think they're going to, you know, hopefully do a pretty good job of coming up with creative ways to let the kids, you know, use the iPads as tools of inquiry and tools of learning.
My guest is Hanna Rosin. Her article in The Atlantic, the latest issue, is called The Touchscreen Generation. It's in the April issue of The Atlantic. We're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. You can write us on Twitter. Our handle is at Leonard Lopate. You can write us on Facebook and, of course, on our show page at WNYC.org. And let's put Sapria from Westchester on the line. Hi.
Hi. How are you? You know, I love this topic, and I think it's touched my nerve because I have a 15-month-old, and I'm a pediatrician. So, you know, I always struggle to figure out what I should do with, you know, the technology sitting around. So I have a tablet, and, you know, before I introduced him to the tablet or before he discovered it, I could see, you know, he would be very interactive with his toys, playing with things. But as soon as he discovered the tablet, you know, it was a struggle getting him away from the tablet and, you know, making him involved with his toys and other stuff. So it's been a challenge, but now I think I've set some limits. You know, I try to hide it. And then, you know, but as soon as he sees it, you know, we have like maybe 5 to 10 minutes where he interacts with it. But then, you know, it's a constant struggle that I really want him to be playing with, you know, the kids or stuff. So I think this is a great topic. And I don't know what the correct solution to it is, but other than setting some time limits.
Well, thank you for calling us. It seems that most of the people who are responding to my call for some input like it, although, again, most of them talk about limits. So we Bamini on Facebook left this comment: "We let my two-year-old use apps when we need to on the subway, in a restaurant. We're mindful of following up with tangible versions of what she is learning in the apps. For example, if she's using a spelling app, when we go home, we break out the Scrabble set and make words with Scrabble pieces. Also, the redundancy in alphabet and numbers teaching apps helps reinforce concepts in many different ways. Because of the iPhone, my daughter has learned to take pictures by herself and find and play her favorite music. This is more than any TV could do."
I think those are all great, and I would just say shift it a little bit towards the, you know, sort of pleasure and fun. I think the idea of taking out Scrabble and showing the connection to the real world, and also I like Scrabble because it's a game, so it's not like, oh, I'm just teaching and forcing this down your throat. You know, the idea that this is part of your world, this is a tool that you can use, it's really fun. I wish I could urge all parents, instead of just thinking about limits, to try the experiment I try, to kind of take the sting out of this idea that, like, oh my gosh, if I let this kid have too much, because I think we get engaged in these battles with our child where they see it as this forbidden thing and they want it more, and then we limit it more and they want it more. Whereas, you know, maybe if we didn't so much transmit the attitude that this was forbidden, but that this was pretty great and that there were really cool ways to use this, maybe it would normalize the whole relationship between the child and the iPad.
Well, there were concerns with some of children's TV that education was being made it being treated as a fun thing, and that was making it harder for kids in school. And there are concerns that people have about these apps as well, that they blur the line between learning and just playing a game and having fun.
Yes, I think that that the learning and having fun, I mean, that's something for that horse has left the gate, basically. I mean,
so Sesame Street hasn't ruined our schools?
Well, you know, people, one thing I did in reporting the story is look back at the old Sesame Street debate, and there was a huge debate about Sesame Street and how it was going to, you know, ruin children and ruin their attention spans. And, you know, we all now think of Sesame Street as like nostalgic for the long gone age when TV was slow and educational and wonderful. But I say that horse has left the gate because I think, you know, technology has probably, you know, shortened children's attention span. There are wonderful studies about, you know, how long children could sit still in 1972 and how long they can sit still now. But I don't know that what we can do about that except say, you know, the flood is here. Let's not just manage it. Let's, you know, embrace certain elements of it and take the best of it that we can. There's so many cool things that you can do with certain apps, you know, to even slow the world down, you know, to use it. Kids recording themselves as they're out in nature and recording, you know, what they find and then sort of making it into these maps. I mean, I've seen really wonderful things that both schools and app developers are trying to do. So instead of resisting, just think of the best thing we can do with it because it's here.
Well, it's not only affected children. Most adults work with computers at one point or another during a day. They couldn't imagine doing something like that, spending as much time staring at a screen 30 years ago. So
yeah,
we've all been changed by this.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's part of where our guilt comes from, because we're unresolved about our own relationships with technology. You know, we all have phones that we look at a lot. We spend our days sitting looking at computers, and I think we don't love that. And so we sort of worry that our children are going to end up in that same place.
And along those lines, George from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Listen, there's a dumb and dumber aspect to this. Unfortunately, technology does not develop a child's intellectual curiosity and ability. In fact, it limits it. And as you find out, children become dumber and dumber. In fact, it limits intelligence. So children don't have the emotional interaction with this technology. They don't have the wide range that, say, this little child that reads her book all the time. She's getting a lot of emotional input as well as intellectual input from a book. She's not going to get that from an app. It's just going to repeat itself.
So, Hannah, have studies been done? Are kids getting dumber and dumber?
Yes, they are.
No,
I
completely disagree with that view. I think that's, you know, there is that's just, they're not just, that's a view of sort of the old video game. If you're just pressing a button or just learning something, that's not at all the way some of these apps work. You learn a tremendous amount. You make choices along the way. You know, the thing talks back to you. You talk to it. It's sort of vastly more interactive than kind of a machine robot pressing a button. You know, it really doesn't work that way anymore. So is there less emotional interaction than there is with the book? I'm not sure. I mean, I'm not sure. Different things float different kids' boats. So there are these vast and complicated apps, for example, made by Pixar animators, which I talk about, which create these whole universes. I mean, it's like watching a wonderful mini movie where you're inside the movie and you get to move around and interact and make choices and hear jokes. And I mean, that seems hugely engaging to me. You know, there are really bad books out there. I mean, there's no, you know, if your child never read a book and never talked to a friend and never went to the playground, you'd have a problem on your hands. But that's a really rare child.
Well, you mentioned that not all kids are alike, and I'm assuming that some children can't be torn away from the iPad while others can take them or leave them. But
yes. I mean,
go ahead.
Yes. I mean, I think it's, you know, I have the experience of my own three children, and their relationships with technology are utterly different. They're each interested to different degrees in completely different aspects of technology. So I couldn't say that, you know, as soon as you put an iPad up, the kid zombie-like walks towards
it. Well, Hannah, we're out of time. But, you know, I see an awful lot of adults playing on their iPhones on the way home on the subway. Maybe we're setting a higher standard, a higher bar for our kids than we do for ourselves. Thank you so much for talking with us today, Hannah Rosen. Her article in the latest Atlantic is The Touchscreen Generation. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you so much.